Are you a Smashburger king? Creating those crispy edges and the intense beefy flavor that puts fast food to shame? Thanks to Omaha Steaks, I never have to worry about whether I have high-quality proteins on hand. And they have so many options, handcrafted steaks, convenient comfort meals, and it's always excellent. Celebrate President's Day with the exceptional handcrafted flavor and convenience of Omaha Steaks. Get 50% off the world's best everyday protein. Go to omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their President's Day sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's 50% off at omahasteaks.com and an extra $35 off with promo code YUM at checkout. Go to https://omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide during their President's Day sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we got another bonus episode coming for you with one of our favorite guys to talk to, Philip Kennedy Johnson. Philip, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks, guys. It's always a pleasure.
It is always a pleasure. And we are ostensibly here to talk about Batman and Robin number 30, depending on when you're listening to this. It's either on stands or just about to be on stands. This is the final issue of your run over at DC Comics. But before we even get into that, we got to talk about some personal business, some stuff.
Okay. Whoa, Alex, we're about to unload.
No, we're not.
All right, Oprah, let's get into it.
We have a friend of the podcast named Brett Macris. He runs a great restaurant called Shift down in New Orleans. And it sounds like about a month back at this point, you guys became best friends. Is that a good estimation of what happened?
Dude, Brett's the man. Yeah, it was so fun. And I knew about Brett, of course, because of this show. And
you're welcome.
Sincerely. And I was going to go down to Fan Expo New Orleans in January, and I reached out to Alex. I was like, "Yo, I'm going to be in New Orleans. Can you remind me the name of that place where your boy works?" Awesome. And I reached out. He gave me Brett's number, and I reached out, and I was like, "Hey, man, I'm going to be in town." And I offered to bring him some books. And so it's at the same time, it was the Fan Expo was at the same time as this like jazz education conference that happens there every couple of years. And I've got this good friend that was also going to be in town. So I write a lot of my friends and people I care about into my books in some kind of way, whether it be they'd be inspired by them in some aspect of their personality or their history or, you know, the way they look or whatever. And Lieutenant Catherine Lautrec from Batman and Robin is based very closely on a dear friend of mine named Angela, who's this just some amazing person, musician and teacher. And she looks fucking just like Catherine in the book. And so I told Brett, I was like, "Yo, my friend is coming," and Brett said he knew the Batman and Robin books, and I was like, "Lautrec's going to be with me." He was like, when we were kind of setting up, I told him I was going to be at his restaurant. I was like, he's like, "So which, you know, what do you look like?" or something. I was like, "Just look for the dude that's sitting with Catherine Lautrec. It looks just like her." And he came down and he made such a fuss over her. He made a cocktail called the Lautrec for her.
Yes, of course. Wow.
That was P.S. like my favorite drink now. It's like amazing. It's like it's based loosely on the Sazerac, the iconic New Orleans drink. Oh, cool. And wrote this little thing about it and gave it to her. And like she signed a bunch of the books for him. And it was just the coolest night. And Brett was the coolest guy. His family was great. His wife and son were there. His son, Brooklyn, was there kind of like working with him too. And
it was just awesome. A family shop. The three of them worked together making that food. It's crazy.
It's adorable and amazing. It's unbelievable.
I couldn't believe how good that shit was. And he said you guys had done a show there like the year before or something.
The year before,
and it was like freezing cold. It was just super weird.
In the back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where we ate. Yeah. No, it was... It was an amazing night, and Brett and his family were the best, and it was just a hell of a good time.
Yeah, it was one of the best burgers I've ever had. Like, the food's unbelievable.
Sincerely, that guy is like, he does food like art. It's nuts. I'm not usually like a foodie, but I was so impressed.
Well, we've actually got a couple of follow-ups for Brett here that he wanted to share, because initially, not to pull back too much, but we initially were going to have you on the live show, but you got some stuff going on, so we're pre-taping this, and that's all good. But usually for the live show, he designs a cocktail there as well. So I'm going to try to bring this up here. Let me know.
Of course he did
a cocktail. It has a very long name, which is that time Philip Kennedy Johnson came to New Orleans and sparked my son's love of playing music. I feel like we could compress that a little bit, but it's still very sweet. And I do want to just read the beginning of this for anybody who's listening. So Philip Kennedy Johnson was supposed to be on the live show this week, but he heard I was making a cocktail for him and was like, no, fuck that guy, I will not be attending. That didn't happen. He just had a scheduling conflict and can't make it, which I am totally bummed about now that he and I are best friends. But really, he did come down to New Orleans. We had a great time, met a bunch of cool people. I made them cocktails and food, and it was all encompassed by our love, mutual love of comics. Philip Kennedy Johnson really did talk to my son Brooklyn about learning to play the trumpet and piano and how great it was, and they both liked playing piano. After that conversation, we went home, and Brooklyn immediately started plucking on his little Casio and downloaded an app to teach you piano, which he is still using today. Now Brooklyn is playing piano, practicing violin, and really into musical instruments. And I absolutely believe it was because he talked to Philip Kennedy Johnson about playing piano and trumpet, which is a crazy intro to a cocktail, but there is a
that's so touching, really nice.
But yes, there is a cocktail as well. It is a variation on an old-fashioned bourbon, Amaro, hibiscus syrup, lemon juice, Angostura bitters, and vanilla extract.
Oh, man. I guess I must have told him that old-fashions are my drink, but I don't remember that. I don't remember telling him that.
Sounds like you hung out with Brett for a while.
Yeah.
I had too many of the tricks.
It happens down in New Orleans, for sure.
Exactly, yeah.
He does have one additional follow-up. He had a question for you. I think he mentioned that in addition to everything else, he designs aprons. Years ago,
he made these
incredible aprons for us. Yeah. He made a cipher one for me. Which one? What did he make for
Starman for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Punisher for Pete.
Yeah. I love mine.
He would like to make you an apron. What character would you like made into an apron, Philip?
Oof. Tough question.
Damn, dude. I mean, I'm a Marvel guy now, but
yeah,
but this will be something I'll have, you know, for a long, long time. I got to say Superman.
Wow. Nice.
There we go. Okay. Nice. I will pass that along or he'll lose.
I can't wait to see this apron.
That's awesome, man. Thanks.
I just wanted to quickly jump in and just say, like, you know, as somebody who creates comics, you do create sparks in people and like connect to people. But the fact that like, it wasn't your comic book that created this amazing spark. It was just you being you is also got to be feel pretty special, man.
Well, thanks, dude. I don't know. I feel like it was all Brett and his family. You know, they were just the best, and Angela too. I don't know. Just having them all there is like it was seeing these like different, you know, parts of my life kind of connect and just have such a great time. And I don't know. It was just the best. Talking to Brooklyn was amazing. That little guy is super fun and.
Oh yeah.
Brett had mentioned to me his love of music, but he wasn't into it like that moment. And it was just something fun for us to talk about. And I told him about my own son. He plays trumpet and drums and he and I will jam together. And he said he had a piano and I asked him if he liked to play it or whatever, if he has any favorite songs he likes to play. And he's like, in his way, he kind of told me he didn't really know any songs. And I was like, well, see, figuring them out can be like this fun little riddle where you just have some kind of a fun, like a some little melody from a game or a TV show you like or a movie or something. And if you can just hum it in your head, then you can kind of plunk it out and like just keep trying to find it, you know, just like look for it the way that you would, you know, find something hidden in dirt. Just kind of keep brushing stuff away until you find it. And we talked about that for a minute and he seemed to like that idea. And
holy shit, now I want to play piano. You're spreading it.
Yeah, just like it's like that's how people learn how to improvise. You listen to an improvised solo and transcribe it, like transcribe meaning like write it down. But mimicry is really how I do it. I would always teach students to do it, like to internalize it before you actually write it down. And that's kind of what I was teaching Brooklyn to do. And Brett showed me a photo later of him doing that, of him just he went home and he got really into it. And now he's playing. So that was super, super fun and rewarding.
I am curious, since these are, I mean, you have so many different parts of your life, so many different things that you do, but do you see this philosophy that you just kind of laid out with music, does that bleed through into the way you approach writing comics at all?
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, it's, they don't feel different, actually. Like when people ask me, it's like, why comics? And like, you know, it was music for a long time. It could have been this, could have been filmmaking. I just love making things. I just want to make cool shit with my friends, you know? Like it's, I just do love, I love the collaborative nature of it for sure. That's kind of what got me that's what gave me the bug, like how familiar it feels to like small group jazz or something. But yeah, as far as how it is made, I mean, it's made differently, obviously. And the way that you get better at it is different, but the way that you get addicted to it is actually really similar. Like when you when I got back into comics after years away, you know, when you're a kid, at least I can only speak for myself, as a kid I would read stuff and be like, you know, Batman is awesome or Spider-Man is awesome. I was just thinking about the character. I wasn't checking out all the creative teams and everything. But when I got back into it as an adult and I saw how far the art form had come and what was possible now. Like the guy that ran the shop, which is now Third Eye Comics, this phenomenal place. I told him that when I stepped out, I had been reading a lot of Batman and Wolverine. I was reading Wolverine back when Adam Kubert and Larry Hama were doing it. And I was reading like Joe Mad, Jim Lee, X-Men, stuff like that. And I hadn't really, this is back when, if you didn't like X-Men, you're just like human shit, you know, like everyone had, if you had to read X-Men or you're just a complete loser,
because
that was at the height of his popularity, you know?
Yeah.
And that was when I was reading. And then he showed me the Joss Whedon, John Cassidy, Astonishing X-Men and some other stuff. I was like, holy shit, what am I looking at? This is so amazing. And all these, superhero deconstructions like The Boys and Irredeemable and the, you know, Watchmen, which of course had been around, but I'd never seen it. It was just, it really got me hooked. And then I was like, what else is John Cassidy drawn? Like what else is, I found American Vampire. Like what else is Raphael Albuquerque and Scott Snyder done? Like Kirky. I started looking at the creative teams and following those names to other books. And that is exactly how I got addicted to jazz. When I discovered the Miles Davis, Gil Evans albums, I was like, holy crap. Because I knew Miles Davis, but somebody mentioned Gil Evans. I was like, I don't know that name. And I started looking at everything else Gil Evans had done. And that led me to all these other musicians and what they had done. And like, oh shit, there's Lee Konitz on sax. What else has he done? And it just became like this, just this tree of creative lineage that I didn't know was there. And it just drove me further and further out those branches, and discovering creative teams and books that way is how I got back into jazz, comics after so far away. And that's how I kind of educated myself in the art form. So that's how they feel most similar, I think, is just my lineage and influences have grown just the way that one creative team leads to another. And you just kind of educate yourself as you go.
Yeah. Well, let's take a little swerve and transition back to Batman and Robin number 30, just finishing up that run.
Something fun now, Mr. fucking nerd.
No, it's, I love hearing all of this. Is great.
Yeah, I'm glad you picked up on that tone. Just shut up. That's how he talks to us.
Shut up. Anyway,
when you're not here, that's how he talks to us. And I'm glad that you saw it.
Wow. Thank you. I'll edit this part of the podcast.
I bet you will. This is the lifestyle portion of our show, and now we're moving on.
I was going to do an awkward transition about, like, what is it like finishing this part of your music on Batman and Robin, but I decided to skip that. You are finishing this run on Batman and Robin. We've read the issue. It's a great issue. It's been a great run, but, like, I'd love to hear from you, and I know we've talked about the run various times throughout it, but what do you feel was your mission statement on Batman and Robin as a duo? Where do you feel like you landed at the end of the day with this final issue?
Wow, what a great question. Well, I mean, like I said, I put people in my books that I love, right? And Batman and Robin is just so clearly about my relationship with my own son. And but there are also statements about the character himself, about Batman and his, that whole world about Gotham that I wanted to say.
And you said Alex is the dummy in Scarface?
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Every time, yeah. Every time he calls him dummy, it's Alex I'm thinking of naturally.
Dream come true.
I did. It's funny that that last arc was supposed to be two arcs at one point. And because of all the line wide stuff that was happening in Batman, or excuse me, in the DC Comics rather, we had to kind of tighten it up to make sure that everything kind of was wrapped up in time for all the stuff that's happening now. Like all the, you know, which happens in Big Two shit all the time. Like whenever there's a big event coming and there's going to be a big like alignment of the books or a big like nuclear bomb of an event or something like KO is.
Yeah.
There has to be stuff that gets either truncated or like stretched out or whatever. So we couldn't really do, there's going to be a Quiet Man arc and then a dummy arc after that. That was going to be very different, but well, I mean, yeah, just a longer version where I wanted to, I love the idea that Ventriloquist sees and treats Scarface as like a person, like his boss. Like he doesn't seem to acknowledge that it's actually all just him. And I wanted to have an arc where it was all kind of from his perspective, like where you're not sure who's real and who's not when you're seeing the, when you're looking at like Scarface's crew, you don't know who's real because the turtle wasn't super crazy.
Yeah.
But we ended up doing it all in one arc and it just made the whole thing. I had to cut out every little bit of fat to make it feel like one arc that works, like where Scarface and the Quiet Man are both antagonists in the same book. Anyway, I'm getting way off track here. So you asked about the mission statement though. Anders has loved Batman since he was old enough to love anything. I mean, he just, even more so when he was little, he just, that's all he cared about. Like his love for me came later. it was all about Batman. I've got this amazing photo of him from this little kid's gym where he's got like this cape that he would wear everywhere. And he was like in front of the ball pit in this kid's gym where it's like this cape from. Awesome. There's this little kid in the background, like, fuck is your problem? it was just amazing. Anyway, he's just the best. But just how much he was always into that stuff and how much Batman and Robin he and I played. I was always Robin. We'd always play that stuff. And even like real life elements of our lifestyle together, like the fact that he has all these creative pursuits, like trumpet and drums, and he's into theater, and he makes his own comics and sells them at school, and he makes little stop motion films, and there's all this stuff that he does, and we have to kind of carve out time for him to move forward and all those things all the time. And I have a list for myself as well, just to get everything done. And there are elements of the Batman and Robin relationship of just trying to stay on top of your stuff and like, you know, not wasting a moment that is actually kind of real. And it's been fun to find these little moments of our actual life and slip them into the book. So it feels like us in a very superhero kind of context. So just taking a character like Damian that I think has been very, at times underserved or ill-used, I should say, where he's kind of treated like the evil one or the asshole one. I think that just boils him down to a really unflattering note. And he's a super complicated kid who's been through the mill. Yeah. And I think he's busted in sort of similar ways to the ways that Batman is busted. And they're in such an interesting position now that Alfred is gone. And I just really wanted to make Damian, without taking away the edgy parts of Damian that make him cool and different, also make him much more sympathetic and complicated and make people love him even with his rough edges, you know. So sorry for my long answer, but basically to make Damian more compelling and sympathetic and endearing despite the things that make him different than the other kids.
To me, I feel like reading it, like I love hearing the personal backstory because all of that emotion comes through. Even though the story, there's so much going on, like you're saying, like it's busy from an adventure point of view. But the emotion punctuates, I feel like, every moment. And I read it as, like, it's Damien feeling like he's grown up a bit. Like, he's, like, I would call him the sort of brat Robin. I feel like he gets pigeonholed as. And in this, it feels like he makes so many strides forward. I was like, oh, this is the hero. This is the character now. We can't go back to that smaller Robin. We can't make a kid younger again. And I just hope that that is what comes out of this run, because it's such a, he's such a stronger character here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that a lot. Yeah, I mean, whenever writers get a chance to cover him, the Al Ghul stuff is usually what gets dealt with, because it's just the obvious choice. I mean, he's the Al Ghul element of his backstory is the kind of the distinct thing, and so it's, that's been written in his story just so thoroughly. And even though I myself love the Al Ghul stuff, I have strong feelings on Roz and Talia and everything, and I would love to have done this big Al Ghul kind of epic with him. It didn't feel like time for it because it's been done so much and so recently. I was like, you know, I've never really seen him deal with the Wayne part. He's got a legacy as a Wayne of Gotham too. We never see that. It's all about the Al Ghuls. So I kind of wanted to see him like fall on his face in the beginning and get some humility and realize, oh, wow, I can't – like this girl's hurt and it's kind of my fault. And these normal people – like I'm in this place that I don't want to be with all these normies I look down on. And they can help him, and I can't. And just have him think like, maybe Dad's the broken one. Maybe Thomas Wayne is actually the one that had it figured out. Like, what if that's my legacy? And just have him explore that side of himself, and you know, actually see him being a healer. I thought would be really interesting. So it's been really cool to see that dealt with. Thanks. And it's they deal with that in the new like was it one of the Night Fight issues? Like you see like Grandpa Bruce. You know, meeting his grandson and all that, and you see that Damien grew up to be a doctor and all that. That was really cool to see. I'm glad they're picking up some of those threads, and I hope they continue.
One of the other great things about the issue, and I know this is not necessarily your department, but it's Fico Osseo on art, right? There's a lot of great stuff throughout this final issue here, but I was so struck. There's like a double page spread towards the beginning of just Batman and Robin, super tidy out of Gargoyle, looking over the city, and that's not necessarily anything new in terms of territory for Batman, but man, it's so stunning when you flip to those pages. What's
Vigo's amazing.
No, I was just curious, when you're writing something like that, what's your direction? Is like, hey, two page spread, go nuts, or
Gargoyle? You know what? Let me pull it up right now. I'll tell you what it says. I mean, if it's long, I won't. But let's see. Sorry, give me just a moment. But I'll tell you that while I'm pulling this up.
Organized.
Oh shit! Can you see this?
No.
Okay, I'm just you sound. I wasn't being sarcastic. The fact that you can pull up a script is amazing.
Oh, I was like, crap! I hope you don't see my desktop right now.
Well, you have too many things in that. We can't show. I can't show my desktop.
Yeah. Like, what do you got going on, Justin?
I'm looking at it now. I'm embarrassed just looking at it with my eyes. I can't even imagine what you guys would think.
Like, there's a couple of folders on here with names of books I can't let you see just yet. Let's see. Issue 30. What's the most recent one? 14 November. Okay.
Are you a Smashburger King? Creating those crispy edges and the intense beefy flavor that puts fast food to shame? Thanks to Omaha Steaks, I never have to worry about whether I have high-quality proteins on hand. And they have so many options, handcrafted steaks, convenient comfort meals, and it's always excellent. Celebrate President's Day with the exceptional handcrafted flavor and convenience of Omaha Steaks. Get 50% off the world's best everyday protein. Go to omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their President's Day sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's 50% off at omahasteaks.com and an extra $35 off with promo code YUM at checkout. Go to https://omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide during their President's Day sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply.
Okay, so actually this is really short because by this point, Fico and I have established a lot of trust. And I know how much direction he needs and prefers. And so page two, it just says page two, one panel. The party in Chameleon Plaza across the street from Sacred Heart. Around the periphery, there are a few police cars and barriers blocking off the streets to traffic. A few bored-looking cops are standing near their cars, not expecting any trouble. And that's it. And it says there's an off off-panel line from Penguin saying, anything is possible, and then the opening credits. Earlier, because we had already, in the previous page, I established Penguin on stage at the Sacred Heart Valentine's Party speaking blah, blah, blah. And I guess we did kind of establish what the Valentine's Party out in the on the block looks like. And so we already kind of had talked about what it was going to be. But as far as the details of that page, that was, I just wanted them to kind of understanding by then what the setting was, just let them go nuts.
There's also, while I'm thinking about it, one thing you mentioned towards the top of the issue, Penguin is giving a speech. Is that Batman Returns? Like, that feels very Batman Returns to me with Penguin as the mayor.
It does. That was inspired. Excuse me. That was inspired by the way that Fico draws Penguin. Like, Fico draws Penguin super Batman Returns-y.
Yeah, frothing and, at the mouth and like every exactly, shot. It's awesome.
Exactly. Yeah. No, the long like crook nose that sticks out like 6 inches and everything. It's so clearly Danny DeVito's take. So I did want to give him that moment where it feels like that old movie. Like there was an earlier scene like that too, where Batman's investigating the shooting that happened at the Iceberg Lounge, and he's like, if I was some stupid cop or like some no name person, you'd have been here in time, and like I pay taxes too, and he's just getting all in his face, and it just felt very much like one of DeVito's kind of like rants. So yeah, it was inspired by the way Fico draws Penguin.
Wow. We talked about this the last time, I think, at Baltimore when we chatted, but you had just gone Marvel exclusive at that point, and you still got the Adventures of Superman stuff is rolling out, so there's more DC work coming from you. But
yeah,
if this is the end of your DC work here, other than that, do you feel satisfied with, have you said everything you needed to say about Batman, or are there other like ideas percolating up there?
I definitely have more. I'd love to do more. I mean, if the truck with my name on it gets me, I'm good. But but I do have other stuff I want to do for sure. I mean, in fact, when I got the call to do the Superman stuff, I had a book. It's not exactly a Batman book, but I had an idea for a almost like an Ocean's 11 kind of heist book, in which Red Hood is the protagonist and Batman is the antagonist. Where there's this thing that Red Hood has to get, and for reasons that we'll set up, Batman is actually like the quote unquote bad guy of the book, and he's like this threat that has to be overcome, and it kind of becomes this spy versus spy awesome. Thing where there's like two teams, and the Batman's team understands what they're going for and will not let it happen, and Red Hood knows that Batman knows, but he's going to get it anyway. And it's a really fun story that I'd love to do. And there are a couple of stories with specific villains I'd love to tackle. But the Memento story is the one that I really, really wanted to do. I mean, it fit the Batman and Robin title extremely well because it is so wrapped up in his relationship with Damian. But even if that had not been the case, if they'd gotten me for the main Batman title, I would have made a little adjustments, but it still would have been a Memento story. I love the idea of a multi-generational murder mystery with a serial killer. And I've always wanted Batman books to be detective stories.
Yes,
like he's people always call him the world's greatest detective, but more than half the time, we only know he's the world's greatest detective because they're fucking saying it all the time.
Like, he says it a lot, like too much.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's totally. How you lose the title.
It's not like some he's humility. Saying it, Justin. Take it easy.
Yeah, he says it. That's a very un-Batman move to be like, world's greatest detective calling. Did you have a mystery?
Yikes.
Yeah, dude. Like it's, you know, the guy that's, you know, wearing the scuba gear, punching dudes out. And like he's the world's greatest detective. Like, cool. Show me.
Yeah, exactly.
And so a story like this was really fun. I've always been fascinated with his walkabout from when he was younger. And I love the, I kind of wanted to see a character that's kind of like a Sherlock Holmes sort of mentor, but also kind of like Mike might've been Moriarty actually.
Yeah.
And also inspired by these really creepy Gotham people like Jack the Ripper or Aleister Crowley. And I wanted to, I just envisioned this interrogation with Etrigan the Demon through this mirror and everything. And I had this very specific story I wanted to do, and that's what the Memento story became. So that was the thing I really wanted to tell. And it was, of course, colored by how close I am with my own son and my friend Angela, who is his godmother. And I love the idea of, like, this person that used to be my great friend is now his great friend, and see this mystery that kind of goes on generationally. And just, it was just a really fun story to tell.
Yeah.
I did want to turn real quick and ask you about your Marvel work, because we've been loving Infernal Hulk so much for anybody who hasn't checked it out.
No, thanks, man.
Number 3 is out now. Number 4 is coming out February 25th. But the last issue, for anybody who hasn't checked it out, spoilers, but you turn to look at what Bruce and Betty have been up to. And again, I know this is not exactly your department, but one of the standout things about the issue is that you've got Kev Walker art, and then whenever you flash on anything with the Hulk, it's Nick Klein's art, which I thought was such a great use of two artists in the same book. When did that idea come up, and how did you guys execute on it for the issue?
Man, how did it come together? Nick is doing the best work of his career. And it takes time, like, to do that kind of detail. We have to decide where best to spend Nick, because we really wanted to sing, and he wants to be, like, if he would do every page if he could. He's so invested in this book, but we have to figure out where is wisest to spend him. And there were these scenes that were happening back in Muncie, Indiana, where it's just Bruce and Betty working a day job, and in the wrong hands, I mean, I shouldn't say the wrong hands. I mean, art is hard, but like, there are artists who would draw those, who would see those kinds of scenes as kind of boring and just like want the big, cool action shots. Be like, who could take scenes like that and really make them interesting and nuanced and compelling? And Kev Walker was kind of the name that I kept coming back to, because I had that issue 27 about the guy in the bus with his family. If you remember, like, the kid at the ghost in the woods, man, Kev just obliterated that issue. I mean, it was such a meaningful, beautiful issue. I was like, Kev would take those scenes with Bruce and Betty and just look at their trauma on their faces and really make it great. So, like, what if we, and I knew that those scenes were going to develop into this. Like, you haven't seen the other issues yet where that's going, but it's going to get real intense, and he's still going to get his chance to do some cool shit. Like, I would love to see Kev really spool that out over these issues. But I also want to be consistent. And whenever we see stuff in the Hulkscape, that's always going to be these. That's all. Nick paints those by hand. Those are physical paintings in the world. And I kind of don't want anyone else to touch the Hulkscape stuff. Mm-hmm. And sorry, go ahead, Pete.
No, please finish what you're saying.
The Hulkscape, issue 4 is all Hulkscape. The last page of issue 3 is like the teaser into that. So that has to be Nick, in my opinion. And there's also, God damn, dude, there's the first couple of pages of issue 4. I cannot wait for you to see it. It's coming out in a few weeks, but it's all right, I'm just going to spoil it a little bit. We see like a transition from the real world into the Hulkscape. And there's this thing I've always kind of wanted to do on the page. Like, what if we go wide down to small and use, like, instead of the traditional top left to bottom right layout, what if we did like a golden spiral kind of a thing where we go big, and as we get smaller, we kind of focus in on his eye. And then on the other page, it starts in his eye, and we're in the Hulkscape, and it opens up and becomes the Hulkscape, and that's the painted page. And Nick did it, and it's so goddamn good.
That's so cool.
So the page, that last page of issue 3, where we see him, like, the painted page, that is literally that is canvas that exists. I wanted the first and last pages of this issue to be Nick, to kind of set up what's coming in issue 4. And then, of course, there'll be more Hulkscape stuff in the future, and that's all going to be Nick's paintings.
Well, I just wanted to Chris Farley it up a little bit here and just first start by saying thank you for your Batman and Robin work, because it's awesome. I needed it. It's heartfelt. It's beautiful. Hits a real sweet spot. But the Hulk book, you're melting my brain, dude. Like, you're pushing me in. The greatest time. But it's also like,
I'm so glad, man.
I didn't know, you know, like, the fact that like you're seeing him and then you see the Hulk, like they're two separate people now, is just like, it's insane to me in such a great way. I'm nervously excited because it seems like every time I talk to you, you're like, oh, wait till, and I'm like, yeah, but I wanted to talk to you about the other stuff that happened. You're like, oh, no, no.
But, that's nothing. What do you see? Yeah. That
I mean, how can you keep doing this amazing work? Like, is it just like, do you get an idea about a character? Because it's like, to me, it's like, what hasn't the Hulk, what haven't we seen with the Hulk? Is that how do you approach it? Because you're just, you're having so much fun in the sandbox, and, you know, it's melting my mind that I'm just kind of like, how did he come up with this? Like,
man, thanks. That's, I love when you love my books, Pete. And it's, I mean, and it's so cool to hear you say what you said about Batman and Robin, too, because I was, sometimes I write a thing, I'm like, it's not a piece, not gonna like this one.
Like a little itch in the back of your head.
Oh no.
Yeah, no. So I'm really glad you dug the Batman and Robin stuff because it is heartfelt. But the Hulk stuff, I knew you'd be into this. And I was a little nervous about issue 3 because so much of it is just, you know, people going through their lives. And I was like, the way I envisioned that scene in the kitchen, where Betty's in there, and like we can see that there's something wrong with Betty, but then when we see how bad things have gotten,
yeah,
like that needs to be like this uncomfortable, like, oh god, like this is kind of, I don't feel good right now when I'm reading this. Like I wanted that to really hit, and god, Kev just, and there's the scene when Iron Man's kind of like dressing down Bruce, like giving him shit about what a coward he is. And we see this little pathetic Hulk thing coming out of his back and like digging into the ground, representing what he's doing. I was like, what if this doesn't land? Like, are people going to get it? And just thank God for Kev Walker, man, because he just made that shit sing. Well, so a lot of it is in the hands of the artists. What's that? Sorry.
And I was going to say in our comic club Discord, people were like, is that a new Hulk that comes out of his back when he's stressed and all this? I was like, I think it's sort of meant to be like a metaphor for what Bruce is feeling. They're like, but it could be like a good shame Hulk. And I was like, okay, we can believe that for a while. Let's see where we get.
That's cool. That's not what that is. Yeah. It's just, I was nervous about people misunderstanding it and then thinking like, shit, there's another Hulk and it looks like a worm and, you know.
But I think that's what I love about this book. And I feel like, to sort of be Pete for a second, Infernal Hulk felt like, oh, they're just rebooting. But I feel like you changed the creative more. Like, you got us on that one. Because the layering of the horror in here is, it's more intense. It's like when you boil down a sauce. And it's much more just like potent, like the everyday horror that you were describing with the Betty scene. I was like, man, I did not see this gear here. And it's really, it got me. And I think this is so strong. And even like you said, I was going to say Tony Stark being such an asshole. I was like, what's this? It has that horror element where you feel someone that you're like, oh, I know him. He's nice. And like, wait, he's mean too? What's happening in this movie? And so the question at the end of this is like, were you like, I'm going to make Tony a dick here because it makes everything worse in this sort of horror world for Bruce?
Man, I feel like that thing with Tony just completely earned. Somebody was lighting me up online about that too. He's like, man, these guys are heroes, and this is not how they talk to people. I'm like, get the fuck out of my face. Like, I've met like war heroes in person, and guess what? They've killed shitloads of people, and they're not always nice to everyone. You know, like it's and plus, look at where they are. Like, Bruce lost hard and walked away, and he's like, well, I'm helpless now, so I'm just going to enjoy my life. Like, I completely lost, but I also have the thing that I want. I'm no longer the Hulk, which is actually awesome. So I don't have the power to do this anymore. I also don't have I'm also broken. I don't want to. And I can actually be with the woman I love, and, you know, she's super fucked up now, but we're not going to talk about that. We're just going to live our life and pretend everything's fine. We're just going to hide our head in the sand in middle America and not worry about the problems of others or immigrants or things happening overseas. I'm just going to go to my job. And meanwhile, Tony's still in the trenches.
Yeah, and dealing with his mess.
He's like, this is your fault. You know,
like he has been for years since the Avengers started. He's like, this Hulk's a pain in my ass.
Exactly.
It was so earned.
Hulk is only a hassle. You know, and Tony's still cleaning it up, and he's still like just as much in it. And Bruce just he worked in a vitamin factory, and Tony's like, "What is your fucking problem? This is completely your fault." So I stand on what Tony's saying and doing in that issue, 10 toes. And I feel like, you know, Bruce earned it too. So it's been showing that stuff. And actually, you know, there was a legit meeting about Betty with me and several editors all at once, and another person brought in for their perspective on how to treat Betty. There was actually, this is, hope I don't get in trouble here. There was another scene when they're in the factory. It actually turned out better, I think, the way that we ended up doing it. But there was, when they're in the factory and Betty is talking, making nice with colleagues the way that you do at a day job, and then she sees the like CNN or whatever's on TV. It's Indiana, Fox News probably, and watching the TV, and they see the shot of Infernal Hulk wrecking shop someplace. She freezes, and in the original art, she wets herself. And Bruce notices before anyone else does. And he's like, "Hey, Ricky, just give me one second here." And she's talking to Ned. He's like, "Hey, Ned, let me just borrow, but I got to go over this thing with her real quick." And he takes her to the bathroom. They clean up. And she's like, Bruce is like, "Okay, let's just get you to, let's get home. We'll tell him you got sick or something." And she's like, "No, I'm good. And later they're like, "I don't think we can do this." I'm like, "Why?" Like all the other stuff. I really wanted that moment of like discomfort in the reader, you know?
Yeah.
And we battled it around with what was okay. And in the end, actually another person in the office who gave really great perspective, was like, "What if we make it more about the self-harm?" Cause there was already going to be, they already told me when the script got turned in, like, "I think we're gonna need a trigger warning on this book because of the self-harm." I was like, "That's great. I think there should be one. Let's keep developing the self-harm beat and show her like pulling away the bandage and she's bleeding."
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that'll work. That'd be okay. So that's what we went with. But the Betty stuff was so important. So I'm really glad that it landed and that it wasn't like a letdown for people, because the over the top action has been so big and epic and like cosmic horrors under the ocean. I was a little bit afraid that people would feel let down by the, you know, inner turmoil nature of issue 3. But no. I'm glad it landed.
I think it's more, for me anyway, I'll speak for myself, it's more effective. Those micro moments, like you're talking about with the golden spiral, like you dialing in on that is what hits me harder. And then it makes the stuff when you dial back out even more intense.
Exactly, yeah. I'm really glad it's going that way. I'll say that Infernal Hulk is Act 2. So Incredible Hulk, the first 30 issues, has all been just putting all the pieces on the board. And now we're in this awesome place where all the pieces are there. And now he's the monster of the Marvel Universe. And we're going to be seeing a lot more appearances from other like big heavy hitters in Marvel. That starting like immediately. Like, let's see, issue 5. I'll spoil some shit. Issue 5, we're going to see the Avengers a little bit.
Awesome.
We're going to start seeing X-Men. We're going to see other like beloved characters, like, because Hulk is now this big hassle for the whole Marvel Universe. And that all builds up to this gigantic Act 3 that's coming. So, I can't wait for you to see. I'm really excited for what's coming.
That is all exciting. I mean, to talk about that, like you said, you have a lot of files on your computer you can't talk about yet.
I do.
Rather than ask you any specifics, when may we find out about some of those future things? Are we talking like San Diego, before then, after then?
Diego or before then, yeah. It's okay. Right around that time. Oh, there is going to be a little window of time where people are going to be like, "Okay, PKJ's exclusive. Like, when are we going to find out what the fuck he's doing?" Because, Superman's still coming out for a while, and they did give me time to wrap up my Batman and Robin stuff and everything. But I'm already working on two other series that nobody's seen yet. And one of them is coming out this year. The other one is like, we're slow burning it till next. There's this other one is a passion project of mine that I'm super excited about. And it actually got pushed back in lieu of this bigger project that I think fans will be more excited for. And actually I myself am getting more excited for it. It's really awesome. You're going to love it. It'll be getting announced, if I had to guess, I would say, again, this is a guess because it's real early still, but probably June or July it'll get announced, and then you'll see why I've been so busy and quiet.
Awesome. Philip, this is all awesome. Congratulations on finishing up your Batman and Robin run. We always
thanks love so much.
Everything coming out from you, and excited to see whatever those mystery projects are down the pike.
Yeah.
Appreciate thanks. All the great I'll work.
Say, thank you, man. I appreciate you reading it. I will say one last thing. The Act 3 that's coming in Hulk, there's going to be a little teaser coming very soon. Like a preview of that is coming soon, and that you're going to see, and it's... Yeah, oh my God. I can't wait for you to see how big this is going to get.
Oh, man.
Good tease. Stand down, Philip. Great chatting with you. And looking forward to everything.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks a ton.
Talk to you soon.
Take care.